Chapter 9. Students of American history are aware that the Constitution for the United States of America imposes a requirement upon the federal government to guarantee to the states a republican form of government, as opposed to a democratic form of government. The processes by which representatives to the government are elected might be viewed as democratic, but the form of government itself was to be one of laws and was absolutely never intended to be run by the will of the majority. Without laws to protect the minority from the majority, liberty would continually be at the whim of those who best control public perception. Thus, democracy is and always was a sham form of government, touted by those with the power to manipulate public perception, and thus the vote, and ultimately public policy. Similarly, free market economy is nothing more than the economic equivalent of "come into my parlor," said the spider to the fly. International banking and multinational corporate interests invade and conquer in subtle ways that are as efficient and as effective as any armed forces ever devised by man. In a short few years, effective ownership of an entire country can be transferred permanently and irrevocably out of the hands of its inhabitants and into the hands of foreigners who may freely rape the land, the economy, and the people, and then dump them on the trash heap of history once they have extracted all of the available wealth and resources and human capital. Most importantly, once this type of socioeconomic takeover is complete, the only possible way for the natives to restore their culture and whatever ownership they may have previously enjoyed is some type of violence or alliance with some other foreign power that appears to oppose the interests currently in control of their land. Typically, violence is not a viable option against an occupying force that is technologically superior and has bought off or seduced whatever upper classes may exist in the country. Economically enslaving a people is bad enough, but Western interests, by their nature, cannot be satisfied with this. Profits are far more spectacular if the cultural and religious values of any newly opened market economy can be quickly modernized, that is, replaced, with Western values. People who view Western culture as immoral or decadent certainly will not consume Western goods and services at a rate conducive to maximum profits. So, by both subtle and overt means, any religious or cultural values inconsistent with Western lifestyle must be discredited and eventually eradicated. Of course, during this process, multiculturalism will be the byword, and Western leaders will fall all over themselves pretending to value the music and dance and dress of the native peoples. However, there will be no mention whatsoever of their moral or spiritual values, the part of their culture that would most likely cause them to reject Western values and lifestyle. It is difficult to know what Westerners are really thinking about these issues. A variety of special interests in the Western democracies' free market economies make a huge fuss over helping the so-called third world. Yet their lifestyles, opinion polls, and voting habits send an entirely different message. They want their governments to guarantee their economic comfort and safety, period. It is important to them that the government concoct some bag of wind that justifies what must be done in the national interest, so the killing, raping, and enslaving of foreign lands and peoples will not offend their delicate democratic sensibilities. At least in America, it would appear that an appallingly small percentage of the people pay any attention to the behavior of their government in the first place. Those who pretend to such knowledge primarily wrangle over whether we should blow up the bad guys this month or wait until our goals and exit strategy are clearly defined. The bad guys, of course, are usually brown-skinned folks in countries most Americans never visit and may know nothing about, other than what their own government media cabal has spoon-fed them. It is the rare American who dares to speak out in polite company about the atrocities conducted around the world by American military, intelligence, and corporate interests. But then, how does one speak out without the facts? And how does one acquire the facts necessary for an informed decision when so much information is distorted or suppressed by an image-obsessed, self-serving American media? It is in this context that the expression innocent civilian becomes very curious indeed. Clever rulers and disingenuous politicians throughout history have used catchphrases and slogans to manipulate the minds and hearts of the people over whom they have power and influence. Image-laden words and phrases can be used in honest ways, to be sure. But what if the user is merely parroting the creator of the phrase, usually the media or the government? Has the user of the catchphrase taken responsibility for 1. Acquiring facts, 2. Making moral decisions, or 3. Considering the need for action and personal risk? Simply jump on board the politically correct catchphrase for the issue at hand. Well, everyone knows the terrorists killed thousands of innocent civilians and are attempting to produce weapons of mass destruction and are part of the axis of evil, which is threatening American interests, blah, blah, blah. No, everyone does not know these things. The very one uttering the sentence, in fact, does not know. That is precisely the point. Promoting catchphrases is the stock in trade of those who would manipulate the public mind.